WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
WrestleSpective. Before we begin, I'll tell you a little bit about our sponsor, RudoReels.com. Great place to get downloads and DVDs of professional wrestling from the U.S., from Mexico, from Japan, pretty much anywhere in the world in which there's professional wrestling. So check them out, RudoReels.com. And today I am joined once again by Bill Bicknell, also known as Bill Baconhill, also known as the Hot Tag. Bill, do you have any other aliases?
I fight crime as Captain Copy Editor on the weekends and
nice.
Fly through windows correcting comma splices.
Oh, that's pretty awesome. Pretty excited.
But I've already said too much.
You're approaching Ed Leslie territory when it comes to gimmicks.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yes.
So, are you have the honor of doing this podcasting this match with me. It is the main event of Uncensored 1996.
The Doomsday Cage.
Indeed. It is the Mega Powers, Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage, facing the Alliance to End Hulkamania. Which
has its own Wikipedia article for some reason.
Well, it's an important alliance.
It is
Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, Mang the Barbarian, Lex Luger, Kevin Sullivan, Z Gangsta, and the Ultimate Solution.
Previously the Final Solution for the three of you who know about this match but don't know that yet.
Right, which was of course changed because the Final Solution has very, very horrible connotations.
Yeah, something happened in the 30s or 40s.
Right. So this match, Doomsday Cage match, it is basically a modified version of the Tower of Doom match.
Mm-hmm.
And the Tower of Doom match, the most famous one was Great American Bash 1988. And it involves two teams of five men starting off at the top of a cage, three-tiered cage, and then slowly fighting at the top of the cage and then working their way down through trap doors that open every 2 minutes or so. The obstacle being that the first team that is able to get through this obstacle course wins.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of an odd concept. And this is similar, but the difference is that it is just basically the two men trying to face off against the 10.
Right. It's a huge handicap match, basically, if you couldn't tell already.
Right. And
with different tiers, different cages, different people are locked into different places. And the only time there's a wrestling ring actually in the cage is at the very bottom tier, where I believe Z Gangsta and Ultimate Solution were supposed to be hanging out. Didn't quite work out that way.
No.
They
are randomly not there for a great deal of this match for unexplained reasons. There are a lot of things that happen for unexplained reasons.
It's a lot of unexplained reasoning.
During the situation. Yeah, basically, it's three cages all stacked on top of each other. They're all roughly the same size.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically ring-sized. As you mentioned, there's a ring at the bottom. It's actually not it's at the front of the stage. The actual ring,
right,
that was used for the rest of the matches is in the, you know, where the ring traditionally would be, and it's actually used in a decent portion of this match. But the structure itself, it's at the entrance, which is sort of odd. The lighting there,
yeah,
is a little bit darker than usual lighting, so it's a little bit hard to see certain things, especially,
yeah,
actually at the top.
And if I were to really, you know, right from concept, that was to me one of the biggest issues about this match. It's hard to watch because it's very dark. You can tell that the crowd can't see a lot of things that are going on.
Right.
Because there's not a lot of pops for the sort of big spots that you would be used to in this sort of match, which is something I'm sure we'll get to.
Yeah.
Which might be one of the reasons why they eventually just said, screw it, let's go to the ring and fight. I don't know.
Right. I get the sense maybe that was an improvisation that they decided to do. It's probably the most interesting part of the match. although, you know, the crowd reactions were at least like they were pretty animated through most of it. It wasn't like they were.
Right.
It wasn't like they reacted to this like it was some abomination.
Right. There were just some parts. There's a part where they reverse a figure four.
Yeah.
Hogan and Savage do it at the same time. And you'd expect that to be a big pop from the crowd. And it's just there's nothing. And it's probably just because they can't see it.
Right. Yeah. I would agree with that. And the original Tower of Doom had that problem a little bit as well. But that was more of a case where the tiered cages, the largest is at the bottom and then the very smallest is at the top. So they're in a very confined space at the very top, but it's hard to kind of see what's going on at the very top. The other ones were good. There's scaffolds on the second and third tiers as well.
Mm-hmm.
So the cameras can show you what's going on, you know, at the top. The camera work is better because you can see, you know, most of what's going on throughout
right.
the different areas. So
right.
they at least got that part pretty well.
Right.
But yeah, that's obviously one of many, many issues with this cage match, which is considered by some, perhaps many, to be one of the worst matches ever. I don't quite feel like it was that awful, and I'm I'm a person. The first time I watched it was a few weeks ago, so I'm this is a new match to me. I knew of his reputation, mm-hmm. obviously,
right?
And maybe it's one of those things where you hear something so horrible and you see it and it just doesn't meet your expectations of awful. So, you know, but
I think a lot of people in wrestling have a certain standard about what bad is. I mean, if you tell people on paper Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage are going to beat up eight guys and one of them is Ric Flair,
right?
Then, you know, on paper, it's such an unusual match. On paper, it looks really bad. I don't think it's not boring though.
Right.
There's always something happening. It's very different from a whole lot of matches. There are a lot of things that happen in this match that you would not expect to see in a typical match.
Yeah.
I don't know. So, you know, if nothing else as concept, it's very interesting to watch. So there was no point where I was bored with it. I don't think the execution was perfect.
No,
but
no.
Not at all. But no, I think it's let's call it misunderstood.
Okay. That's interesting.
The poor misunderstood Doomsday Cage.
I will say that this is the point in which the excesses of Hulkamania reached their furthest.
I was thinking the same thing as I was going over it. This might be where Hulkamania jumped the shark.
Yeah. I mean, it probably jumped the shark even before this, but maybe
Halloween Havoc 95, with the, sumo monster trucks.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of instances where you could, I mean, basically, Hogan spent 95 and 96 jumping the shark, and then this is the last significant thing that he did before joining the NWO a few months later.
Yeah. This is the last hurrah of Hulkamania. Well, the first bit of Hulkamania.
Yeah, which is funny that this is the alliance to end Hulkamania, and they almost accomplished their goal.
Inadvertently, yeah.
Yes, yeah. So, that's. I mean, it was clear at this point that Hogan was there were still fans who were into it, but it just didn't have the same energy that it had, you know,
right.
in the heyday, and that had been fading for a long time, really since the early 90s.
Right.
And they're
obviously sort of winding it down. There's nowhere you can really go with Hulk Hogan after this. There's nowhere you can. He's beaten everybody. He's beaten Kevin Sullivan. He's beaten the army of mooks that. They brought back Zeus so he could beat him again.
Right.
Oh, those of you who are new to the match, by the way, Z Gangsta is Zeus.
Yes.
If you've never seen this before, from the early 90s, I believe.
Yeah, 89.
89, yeah.
Yeah, Zeus was Hogan's co-star in No Holds Barred, Hogan's first movie. And then they decided to make that into a wrestling story throughout 89 or even into early 90, I think.
Hey, can I ask you something?
Sure.
The whole time this is happening, were you just saying to Hogan, go for the eyes, Hogan? The eyes are Zeus's weak point. Everybody knows that.
Yeah.
Survivor Series 1989, Zeus's, go for the eyes, Hulk. Come on. You know this guy.
Right. Well, you know, maybe he forgot. It's been a long time.
Yeah, that might be the case.
Yeah. Zeus definitely, had not got any better in the 6 years.
He got fatter.
He got fatter. Yeah, that's true.
He looked bigger around the waist.
He did.
No, he wasn't.
Right.
He wasn't very good in 1989. For those of you who haven't seen him,
he was among the worst wrestlers I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this match does him no favors either.
No. So, you know, the so this is sort of the capping off of also the Dungeon of Doom story in
right.
BCW, which dominated. You know, Hogan basically fought the Dungeon of Doom for the better part of a year.
And he fought the Dungeon of Doom while he was still in the NWO, which was for a few months, which was just weird. The Dungeon of Doom lasted lasted an unreasonably long time after this match, actually.
Yeah.
Another 6 or 7 months or so of the Dungeon of Doom with, like, Conan running around in it.
Right, yeah, that was where they were basically mid-card heels who occasionally fought against the NWO, for the most part. But, basically the whole thing, it was led by Kevin Sullivan, who, for those who don't know Kevin Sullivan, he was about 5'7", 5'8", didn't really look tough, but he kind of, well, he was able to kind of present be a tough guy. He had this heavy Boston accent in the 80s. He worked sort of a gimmick where he was a devil worshiper. It was always implied. It was never really outright stated.
Right.
But,
he's the taskmaster of the Dungeon of Doom is the way they put it, where he's the one who was kind of the evil mastermind. He, as I recall, the issue with Hulk Hogan stemmed from a long, long dog's age ago was Hogan sort of fell in with his brother Dave Sullivan.
Right.
And Kevin Sullivan was trying to pull him away from it, and that led to the Three Faces of Fear, which was Sullivan, the Avalanche, and the Butcher, which was Brother Brudeye, which was Brutus Beefcake, which led to those two fighting at Starrcade, which I'm sure you've talked about before.
Yeah, that was Starrcade 94. So this is, you know, 18 months later almost.
And it's still happening in another form. Even the Avalanche came back as the Shark in the Dungeon of Doom for a while. I don't remember if he was still with them at this point. Yes, he was. I remember now, because a few weeks from now, about a month or two from now, he's not a shark anymore and not a fish.
That's right.
He's a man.
Yes. And I was on that podcast, too, What a Maneuver podcast, so I should remember that.
Yes.
The members of the Dungeon of Doom included Kamala, the Shark, who's Earthquake, Avalanche, the Zodiac, who was basically what Brother Brudeye evolved into. The Giant was in it. He was kind of the main feud that Hogan had during the 95-96 era, though he's not involved in this match.
Big Van Vader was affiliated with Sullivan. I don't know if he was ever really in the Dungeon of Doom officially.
I don't think he was, but yeah, Hogan feuded with him in 95, 8 or 95. Mm-hmm. That was kind of, Doom was on the periphery then. I mean,
and there were 400 incidental mooks who came and joined the Dungeon of Doom. I was on What a Maneuver, too, and I think Braun the Leprechaun debuted the week we were talking about it.
That's right, yeah, that was a brief toward the end. The guy who Buddy Parker. Yeah, the guy who trained. He was the trainer of the power plant for a long time. And then he was later involved with some Goldberg storylines toward the end of WCW.
Yep.
And then
a lot of mooks. The Faces of Fear, Ming the Barbarian, you think you mentioned them.
Yeah, Hugh Morris. One Man Gang. So a lot of it was bringing back old opponents of Hogan's from the 80s and 90s. Big Bubba, guys like that. So it just kind of basically like monsters for Hogan to run through. But for the most part, these guys were not really – no one would have thought these guys were Hogan's league because Hogan was at such a high level at this point. I mean, it was like a superhero who had so many powers that you just couldn't believe any threat, which leads to the whole 8-on-2 or 10-on-2 thing.
Right.
Which, of course, is sort of its own absurdity.
Right.
Yeah.
We should mention, by the way, yes, the Horsemen were involved here. Flair and Arn Anderson had issue with Hogan from early in the year when they got the Horsemen back together at the end of 1995.
Right.
Flair stole Miss Elizabeth away from Savage.
Right.
Flair had been a babyface for about – no, Arn – was Arn the baby? No, Flair was the babyface, right?
Yeah.
Or was Arn the baby?
Well, it was kind of weird because
– Who teamed with Sting? Somebody teamed with
Arn teamed with Sting.
Okay, Arn was the babyface then. But it was basically a vehicle.
No, Flair's team was Sting. I think basically what it was is Vader, and right at the end, toward when Vader was leaving, he sort of half turned babyface. And then he beat Flair and Arn in a handicap match. Arn was mad at Flair for not holding up his end of the deal, so they did the Flair. Vader match, Flair and Arn match. And then Pillman helped Arn win it. That was sort of Arn turning heel, even though he'd kind of been the babyface leading up to it. And Flair brought in Sting, and then it ended up being a swerve where Flair turned on Sting, and then the Horsemen were together as heels with Pillman and Benoit as the new members.
So it was sort of an alliance of convenience with the Horsemen. Neither of them liked Hogan, so they said, hey, let's team up and beat the Jesus out of Hogan.
And
for those of you, by the way, who weren't watching at the time, if you think all of these face heel turns happening like every month are confusing yet, we haven't gotten to Lex Luger yet.
Exactly. Well, one more thing before we get to Luger, it's sort of a key is that the Dungeon of Doom and Horsemen had issues with each other intermittently throughout 96, and it would eat more even in the summer of 96. They would outright feud. But kind of the big part of it was Pillman sort of being the loose cannon, running down Sullivan, and he and Sullivan even had an infamous match at Sewer Brawl 6 in a couple months before, or I guess a month before this, where Pillman work shoot type thing where he said it was a strap match with an I quit stipulation, and you would just say I respect you.
Yeah, it was the respect match that happened periodically at that point.
Right, and then Pillman said, I respect you, Booker man, which tied into Sullivan being the guy who – the Booker of WWE at the time. And that was a whole ball of wax that we don't necessarily need to get completely into, but eventually Pillman – it was sort of part of a storyline that Pillman and Eric Bischoff were working up as to try to swerve – the internet at the time and smart fans and everyone even involved in WCW, which led to WCW actually releasing Pillman from his contract, which led to Pillman leveraging that into a bigger money offer from WWE.
Yep. big hot mess.
Right.
But very fun to watch at the time.
Yeah.
Very exciting stuff.
Very, we're used to sort of wrestling, working in some of this stuff. But in 96, that was pretty novel. So.
Yeah.
Lex Luger.
Jesus. Lex Luger turned heel on, was a babyface, turned heel on Hulk Hogan. Was kind of a half babyface, was the tag team champions with Sting, I believe, at this time.
Yes.
And Sting was a good guy because Sting's always a good guy.
Yeah.
And Sting actually worked a tag team match with Booker T earlier in the show.
Yeah.
Again, Hawk and Animal, the Road Warriors as bad guys, which was also weird.
Yeah.
A lot of weird. And this was, I believe, billed as Luger was primarily affiliated with Jimmy Hart.
Right.
And so this was billed as Luger's last match with Jimmy Hart. Jimmy Hart actually gives him an airbrush jacket during a promo on this show, and then gives him a teary eye. I love you, man. Which in 1996 was fantastic.
Yes. Yes.
And so it's sort of billed as Luger kind of doesn't want to be there. I think it seems like he was kind of finagled into it because of his affiliation with Jimmy Hart.
Right.
And so he's sort of the question mark in this match, and it comes into play in the ending of the match as well.
Yeah. Although at no other point other than the ending.
Right. other than that, it was, yeah.
Yeah.
So the Luger thing is probably the least straightforward part of this match that's full of confusing weird shit.
Basically, yes.
Yeah.
So I think we've properly explained the alliance to end Hulkamania.
Right. They were bad guys and did not much care for Hulkamania. Not one bit. No.
Michael Buffer.
Oh my God.
Yeah. sort of a strange effort by Michael Buffer. Now he had a lot of copy to read because, of course, you know, he's introducing, you know, the alliance to end Hulkamania to begin with, and there's a lot of guys, and you know, it takes a while to get up to that cage because, of course, it's three levels high. So,
I think all told, he introduces Jimmy Hart. Does he introduce the women, Woman of Miss Elizabeth?
I think he just briefly mentions it, but I don't think he said.
Okay, he's got 13 people to introduce here.
Right.
And so a lot of it is just the first thing he says is they will enter the Tower of Doom to meet the Megaforce.
Right.
And he keeps calling them the Megaforce.
Right.
Over and over. Keeps calling the Mega Powers the Megaforce.
Yes.
I just wanted to reach back in time and strangle him.
Right. Well, they are a force.
They are a force, and they are undoubtedly mega.
Right.
There can be no questioning their meganess.
I would never do such a thing.
Right. So everybody gets a little nickname. Kevin Sullivan gets his evilness himself, which is decidedly unscary.
Yeah.
Ming is from some unknown part of the planet.
Yes.
Which is
Tonga. It's not
which
no.
is Tonga.
Yeah.
Wherever the hell that is.
Right.
The Barbarian is banned from every country.
For the human destruction he's left in his wake.
Yes, exactly. The Ultimate Solution has powerful biceps.
Yes. We're on the scary stuff at this point.
I guess that's and at this point you're kind of going, you got to admire Kevin Sullivan's strategy of recruit every single mook that Hogan has beaten before and
right.
put him into a giant cage. And
yeah. Well, Ultimate Solution,
we'll get him.
he was not someone who Hogan had faced before.
Ultimate Solution, did he even have a wrestling background?
Yeah, he did. I've seen him, I think, in Alabama?
Oh, yeah. There's a Wikipedia picture of him in a military outfit under the name Jeep the Mercenary.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. He gets written off a lot of times as they had an actor in the match because he later went on to play Bane in Batman and Robin a year after this match.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's not really fair to say, I guess, he was an actor in this match, but he was not a very good wrestler either.
No. Yeah, I don't think he was. Apparently he was in No Holds Barred as well. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He had some impressive biceps, though.
They were very big.
Mm-hmm.
They were very large.
Was there anything? I think I covered Michael Buffer being outrageous.
Yeah, he also says, well, I mean, not really that outrageous, but he calls Z Gangsties from Hulk Hogan's past return to haunt him again. So,
he's going to haunt him again.
I will say one thing: he does call Hulk Hogan the King of Hulkamania,
not the Duke of Hulkamania.
No.
Not the Viscount of Hulkamania.
Yeah, he is the King of Hulkamania, which I guess it was named after him, so...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
His father was the King of Hulkamania before him, and he inherited that title.
Right. That's pretty impressive. Hogan has a yellow tie-dyed shirt and long, tight pants, red ones.
Yep.
Hogan Savage has yellow and black pants, a black frayed t-shirt, and a pink bandana.
because
Randy Savage can pull that off.
Yeah, exactly. That's what he did.
Yeah,
we should mention, by the way, Z Gangsta and the Ultimate Solution did not come out in this first part of the match.
That is important. And even the announcers, who are, by the way, Tony Schiavone, Bobby Heenan, and
Dusty Rhodes.
Yes, they mention, you know, they talk about that they're not there, wondering where they are. They do mention Pillman, so Pillman is not out of the picture yet.
It was scheduled as a 9-person. Was it supposed to be 9 people? I think it was scheduled as 9 people. Pillman was supposed to be there.
Okay.
Or was it 10? I don't know.
I'm not entirely clear on that, to be honest. Okay. Yeah, because it's 8 on 1. And yeah, and what's Benoit up to at this point?
I don't know.
So maybe he's in Japan or something. But
yeah, we'll go with that.
Yeah. He's not on the show. Yeah, Benoit would sort of go back and forth in Japan. He would not show up with the Horsemen randomly for weeks on end, and then would be there. So during this time, so it's not that unusual. But still, he's right. Obviously a member of the Horsemen. You're a little surprised he's not part of it. Would have ruined his reputation otherwise, I'm sure.
Right.
Yeah.
They kind of file into it. Arn Anderson is wearing a black sweatsuit, and I couldn't figure out why.
Yeah. Well.
Everybody else is in wrestling gear, and Arn's decked out, looks like a longshoreman.
Arn doesn't want to get hurt, I imagine, on that, on the bottom surface, which is basically like, you know, fence, you know, galvanized steel. And
you can tell when he gets in it, he's feeling it out.
Yeah.
There's a lot of feeling out at the beginning.
There's not a lot of, like, bumping, and there's not a lot of stuff going on in the first, you know, third of the match. Because they don't want to take heavy bumps onto that floor because it would really, really hurt.
Right.
Yeah. So it's pretty nondescript. I mean, it's just kind of basic Flair Hogan action, and there's nothing that that, you know, stands out in particular other than kind of the dueling figure fours, which you know happen.
This is the first tier, by the way.
Yeah, they're
Flair and Arn are in the first tier.
Yeah, they're all at the top tier, and then the second tier is split in half, and Sullivan and Luger are in one half, and Faces of Fear, Ming and Barbarian are in the other half of it. And
I should mention here, by the way, there is a lot of Hogan strangling Ric Flair, probably in the absence of heavy bumps, and I think that's something that people forget about Hogan is that he did a lot of kind of heel stuff in his repertoire, even when he was a good guy.
Oh, yeah.
There was a lot of strangling and back raking and things like that. I'm sort of watching this. This whole match is marked by a lot of, you might call it Savage and Hogan doing what they can to even the odds against 8 guys. But
right.
If you were to just look at it from straight wrestling logic, it looks like they're doing things bad guys do.
Yes, absolutely true, and that's certainly something that Hogan would commonly do. Hogan was not a nice person,
right?
I think we should mention that.
Yeah, one more thing I got here that I thought was kind of a missed opportunity. There's a bit where Flair is beating Savage up, and Luger is in the bottom cage below him. It's kind of hard to catch, but Luger's kind of holding on to Savage's legs, and just kind of holding him down. And I thought that was a neat idea, and that's one of the reasons why I thought that the idea of this match was better than how it turned out. Because the idea of having different guys in different rooms with a little bit of going back and forth, and there was some of that at the start of the match. Flair slipped something through. Did we ever find out what that was?
I don't remember that.
Okay. Flair slipped something through the bottom of the cage, and
I think it was
really
Brass Knucks.
Yeah, it looks like that.
I think Hogan gets it at some point.
Okay. I didn't remember that. That felt like Chekhov's gun, and then it seemed to just sit there on the mantle. I don't know.
But
there's this idea that different guys are in different tiers, and they're kind of working together to circumvent the only advantage that the Megaforce has. I'm going to keep calling them the Megaforce. That is what they are called for this match. I think that's a novel idea.
Yeah.
So I give them full credit for at least trying to have a different kind of match here.
And like there are 4 triple cage matches that I can recall as far, you know, well, WCW pretty much had all of them. I know the Tower of Doom, I think, was a world class thing beforehand, but I've never seen, or I don't know if there's any footage of any of those matches. But there's the Tower of Doom match that I mentioned. There's this. There's the at Slamboree 2000, the triple threat of DDP, Jeff Jarrett, and David Arquette.
Surprisingly good match, by the way.
Yeah, actually, it is pretty good. There's some silliness, but and there's definitely some clusterness. But and then there's a War Games from 2000 on Nitro, which
huge is, teams, yeah.
Yeah, it's like it's
Scott, Nash is in it.
Yeah, Nash, Scott Steiner, Jeff Jarrett, and Russo against Goldberg, Booker, Sting, and another babyface that I'm not immediately thinking of.
Paige?
I don't think it's Paige. I just watched it today, so I should remember what it is, but I can look it up, so I'll know who it is, and then I'll feel happy. The listeners, obviously, we want.
This is the they need to know this.
They do need to know this. They can't look it up on their own, you know.
Yeah, this would be
quicker than I would. Chronic.
Chronic. Yes, Chronic. That's right.
That makes sense. Yes.
Of course.
I guess technically the Harris brothers were in it too, although they go into it. I didn't realize they were in it. It doesn't matter. The point being. Right. That's a mess as well. But all of these matches, like, I felt like there was a good something involved in them. Like, there were good ideas, and it was like the three-tier cage thing could work, but none of them quite like were exactly as effective as they could have been. They all are problematic in some respect.
Yeah, and let's face it, part of it might just be the fact that this is a match with like Hulk Hogan and the Barbarian and Lex Luger and Kevin Sullivan and the Z Gangsta in 1996.
There is that as well. Although I do greatly enjoy the Barbarian in late 90s WCW. So I'm good there is a good point there.
Right.
One thing that Tony believes that there may be a trapdoor, but he's not entirely sure. Like, I feel like there may not have been the best cluing in of announcers and maybe the audience of exactly what's going on in this match.
And Buffer doesn't really lay out the rules either.
Right.
He just sort of says, and the wrestlers don't even seem clear of the rules, which we'll get to in the ending.
Right. Yeah. Very much so.
It's a mess, basically. There's a whole lot of things. I feel like these guys needed to sit down for about 3 hours and talk about this, and that's another thing that probably would have helped it go a lot better.
Perhaps, yes.
Yeah.
So eventually, some of the action that we have, there's a metal pole in the middle of the top. So right. Occasional things where they sort of pull each other into the metal post, like Arn and Hogan at one point fighting between it and so on and so forth. So they use that a little bit, but that even that isn't really used to any sort of maximum effect.
Right.
So we have the dueling figure fours. Dusty at this point talks about that people need to go home, should go home and lay on a fence and see how it feels.
which I immediately did.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Because if the dream tells you you do it, you got
to
do it.
You do it. You listen to the dream. No question about it. Heenan said, well, go put your neighbor on a figure four, which he's like, no, don't do that. And then he's like, well, do it a figure eight on your Doberman, you know, if you need to, because he has, you know, four legs. So that makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm. It's brilliant math.
Nice Heenan. That felt like an old school Heenanism there. You know, Heenan was kind of sharp here, which sort of in WCW would have his times where it was not. So.
Mm-hmm. Of course, then a minute later, he said that this surpasses the Super Bowl in the World Series. So. Oh,
yeah, okay. and then, yeah, eventually, like you said, Flair passes something down to Sullivan through the cage. And then suddenly, Hogan and Savage are able to give powder. And they use it on to subdue Flair and Anderson long enough to escape through the trap door.
Because the match wasn't already hard enough to see, so let's throw some powder into it.
Sure. So we have we're in the half room where Hogan is first at Mang and Barbarian, but he's able to at some point steal a chain and go after Sullivan and go through the other half.
Right, and this is where it starts to break down just a little bit, because when they get down, all four guys are down there in the next tier's room.
Right,
right off the bat. So there's a little bit of, wait, didn't, aren't they supposed to be in different rooms? But it, this is where it starts to kind of get weird. Go off the rails a bit.
Right. We have Sullivan accidentally punching the cage at one point.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's Tony who says that Lex Luger is in his element here, which I cannot think of an element in which Lex Luger is less in it than here.
No. Poor Lex Luger. This is he does. Well, that's a Shivaniism for you, I guess.
Right. We go to the split screen for a while, which the split screen never really was an effective thing. What WCW would use it. It was one of their worst production things because it never just worked out very well for them, you know?
And part of it is that the WCW split screens were always full of just minutiae.
Yes.
There was a lot of border stuff going on, and then the images of the match were always extremely tiny.
Right.
And if you really want to see this in effect, watch a World War III.
Yes.
And that's one of the reasons why I think that it never quite worked, and it didn't quite work here, but
yeah,
they employ it for the next little while.
Yeah.
I think till they get out.
Yeah.
Is it totally
they go back and forth to it every once in a while, but
yeah.
Barbarian accidentally clotheslines Meng, but they do take control at some point. Eventually, Hogan's able to lock the cage door on Barbarian and Meng, so we have Hogan and Savage in the one half with Sullivan and Luger.
Right.
Sullivan does the good old punch in the balls to Savage, while mm-hmm. Hogan then smashes Luger's head repeatedly into the cage.
Mm-hmm.
Arn and Flair make it down into the one half of the cage where Barbarian and Meng are, but that doesn't really do them very much good because, you know, they're still stuck behind.
And it's hinted at earlier on that might be against the rules of the match. And I recall it was hinted at some point that once they get out of the tier, that cage, they're supposed to be done.
Ah.
But this was the point, again, where I said, like I said, it's starting to go off the rails. So, yeah, Flair and Arn, noted locksmiths, coming to help Meng and Barbarian.
Yeah, open the cage. Exactly. Sullivan and Hogan make it outside onto the scaffold on the second tier.
Oh, my favorite part of this match.
Sullivan comes close to dangling from it with Hogan trying to kick him off, which, you know, is maybe just a little bit murderous.
Yes. Yeah. I have here in my notes written in all capital letters, Jesus Christ, Hulk Hogan nearly murders Kevin Sullivan.
Right. Which is not, you know... Granted, you know, he is facing off an enemy who is trying to eliminate, who is trying to destroy the thing that he represents the most, but murder, you know?
As Bobby Heenan puts it, he's going to be spam if he hits.
Right, right.
And then it ends with that dastardly, evil Kevin Sullivan using a low blow to stop Hulk Hogan's attempt to really murder him.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they go down a level, and... Sullivan tries it.
Yeah, Sullivan then tries to dump Hogan, you know, which would not be quite as far, but still would not be good for Hogan, you know.
He wouldn't be spam, but he would certainly be, you know, some kind of cold cut.
Yes. Right. Salami, perhaps.
Oh, yes, yeah, salami.
Yeah.
Maybe head cheese.
Yeah,
who knows?
Right. Were Al Snow and Steve Blackman part of the alliance to end Hulkamania?
Wonderful.
It was a large alliance, so maybe they were in it too.
they were probably in the Dungeon of Doom at some point.
At some point, I would have to think that. Yeah.
I think I was in the Dungeon of Doom.
I believe you were. I believe I saw that episode. So
I was Max Muscle.
So Sullivan,
there's your obscure trivia question for the day, Max Muscle.
Yeah. Look.
Okay, so they go down.
Yeah, they go down, and then, so Hogan and Sullivan are on the floor, Luger drops down to help, Savage ends up down there too, and then they just all of a sudden head into the ring in the middle of the arena. And
yep, they head to the main ring and start fighting it, and the crowd really gets into it.
Yeah, it's basically a hardcore match for the next third of it or so. We have... go ahead.
With weird stuff, because one of the very first things that happens is that... Sullivan goes back to the cage and he starts moving some wood around.
Yeah.
And it's never quite, Dusty of course says he's moving plunder around.
Yeah.
And it's never quite clear what he's doing because I don't recall him ever using anything from that pile.
Right.
He just, he just kind of rearranges the furniture while Savage and Hogan beat the crap out of him with chairs and microphones.
Yeah, it is very strange. And
they're not very good bad guys, is what I'm saying here.
They are not very effective, no.
Oh.
Yet they managed in Hulkamania, so mm-hmm. What can you do?
I asked this question on here. Was there ever a definitive Hogan-Sullivan match? Obviously, the point of the Hogan-Sullivan feud was Sullivan trying to stack the odds against Hogan, but did they ever have a one-on-one match? I don't think they did.
Not on pay-per-view.
No, certainly not on pay-per-view.
I mean, I don't think so.
That always bugged me when I was a kid. I don't know. I was always going, why doesn't Hogan just beat up Kevin Sullivan? And it just never happens.
Yeah.
I see it now as kind of the point, you know, with Sullivan being the mastermind and having, you know, he doesn't need to beat up Hogan because he's got the Giant working for him. So
yeah, he's more like the manager. I mean, he's a wrestler too, but he's more like the Bobby Heenan or the Lou Albano or whatever, you know.
Right.
He's meant to be beaten up after the match. But yeah, that's I never thought about that. Yeah. Because Benoit ends up being the guy who retires Sullivan.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually he's
that was a long feud too.
Right. I mean, basically the Horseman Dungeon of Doom thing lasted until summer of 97.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because it
that was a dark time for the Horseman, by the way, if you've never seen it.
Yeah.
That was full of things like Mongo McMichael with a briefcase and Jeff Jarrett before he was any good in the white tassel thing.
Right.
So yeah, that was a mess.
It was not good. I sort of like the Mongo with the briefcase thing. I think that's pretty good. But
Mongo's underrated.
Yeah.
I'm not
necessarily a big fan of Mongo, but I like that story of Mongo. You know, turning on Kevin Green because of the money and so forth. I thought that was pretty good.
We should have done that. That's a good show.
Yeah. Oh, we can always do it. You know, it still needs to be done. Yes. So there's a lot of fighting in the ring.
A lot of brawling. Yeah. A lot of weapon spots.
Everyone else comes down. Although Ming and Barbarian are never seen again. I'm not entirely clear what happens to them.
They had to go back to their home, to some unknown part of the planet.
Right, because they were banned from this country. So
they found out they were banned from this country, so they got exported to some unknown part of the planet.
Yeah.
So, it means to.
Yeah. So everyone sort of comes down. Hogan smashes an object on the Luger's back. Sullivan sends Savage headfirst into the cage. So they're more at the cage at this point, actually. Okay.
What was that object? I thought it was a backpack.
I was not clear on that. I just thought it was an object.
Okay, good. I wasn't the only one.
Yeah. Tony at this point says, "This has been spectacular." He's very excited about the things.
It's the biggest night in the history of this great sport.
Yes. So now they're in the ring. Luger and Hogan are there first. Hogan does Luger's pose to mock him, then hits him with a clothesline in the corner. Savage runs in with some plywood and hits Sullivan. Hogan does 10 punches on the ground and pounds his head under the mat. Sullivan eventually sneaks behind and low blows Hogan. We got all four in the ring and some more brawling. Hogan does some chair shots to Luger. Luger later then gets some chair shots into Savage and Hogan. So we got a decent, you know, brawl.
Yeah, it's fun. This is probably the best part of the match. It's exciting. It's kind of fun.
Now, it doesn't really make any sense in the rules of the match since they're supposed to remain in the cage, but they're technically get through all the different places and so on and so forth, I guess. But
I like Luger Hogan. I like when it happened. It usually I don't know what it was. Neither of them are, you know, what you would consider spectacular workers or wrestlers or anything like that.
Right.
But I like the dynamic they had.
It was just
they were big strong guys and they yeah.
I particularly recall their Nitro match where Luger wins the title very fondly. So
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So Savage is crotched on the rail and clotheslined off by Sullivan. The Mega Powers ram Luger and Sullivan's head against each other. So finally, after several minutes of this, we have the Ultimate Solution and Zeke Hanks to come out. Tony makes remarks on Zeke Hanks's pecs, which are admittedly large.
yes.
I'm not sure that's exactly the place that you want to, you know, make mention, but cool. Okay.
So they had pecs and biceps. This was Sullivan's plan.
Yes. Yes.
If we can just work that upper body, we can end Hulkamania.
Exactly. We have the mega powers taken back to the bottom of the cage. We have a big Hogan chant at this point.
Oh, the cage is lit now, by the way.
Yes. Yeah, the bottom of the cage is lit. Well, so you can see it well. The heels, because they are strong and muscular, they flex.
Mm-hmm.
Solution pushes back Hogan a couple times. Z Gangsta and his former tag team partner, Randy Savage, don't actually do a whole lot, don't do much. Zeus pounds his own chest actually more than he pounds on Randy Savage.
There's a lot of pec slapping, which is par for the course with Zeus, Z Gangsta.
Yeah, that's true. That was something he ended up doing. So Sullivan pokes Savage with a stick through the cage.
He's harpooning people.
I'm not really clear on why Sullivan doesn't join in the action at this point, but, you know, I guess they're following the rules again.
He's just a nasty little guy. That's what it looked like. He's just kind of letting the big guys do his work while Kevin Sullivan pokes him with a stick. If you want the story of the entire Dungeon of Doom run, that basically summarizes it.
I guess that's a good point.
Big, lumbering, uncoordinated guy punches the Jesus out of Hulk Hogan while Kevin Sullivan pokes him with a stick. And that is the Dungeon of Doom.
Right. In a nutshell.
Yeah.
You can put that on a t-shirt. You know, that's succinct enough that you could, you know, you don't need an hour-long podcast. You just got that, you know?
Exactly.
There's
some point in this happens where the Alliance is done, Hulkamania is filtered down, and Jimmy Hart, they get a shot of him jumping up and down and cackling like a madman outside the ring.
Yes.
And I just went, God, I miss Jimmy Hart.
Yeah. I watched Survivor Series 89 today randomly as well, or a bit of it. And there's a moment with Jimmy Hart and Sherry where Jimmy Hart is acting much in the same way. And Sherry is being, of course, ostentatious and over the top as well. And it's glorious. It's so that reminded me of that. We do have Savage able to make a little bit of a comeback. He gets an axe handle on Zeus, which prompts Dusty Rose to say he got him wobbly. And but then Savage is caught in a Z Gangsta bear hug. Hogan smashes Ultimate Solution's head into a cage. We have Z Gangsta and Hogan doing a bit of a stare down, which Zeus, as he's wont to do, chokes him down, which also happened in Survivor Series 89.
Yep.
Swenson does a press slam. I call him Swenson because I but a solution. Press slam on Savage. Yeah.
Bane.
Yeah. Many names.
That's why we're doing this event, because WWE just released Ready to Rumble. No, not Ready to Rumble.
Yeah.
The other one. No Holds Barred.
Right.
And Bane was just in Dark Knight Rises.
Right.
So we are doing a send up to both of the bad guys in those movies today. Sure.
Yeah. a lot of fortunate timing here.
Yep.
So Zeus Hogan rakes Zeus's eye, smashes it on a turnbuckle. Zeus sells it in a way in which he does not seem to be in any sort of pain yet doesn't really effectively no sell it either. Zeus is not good. Yep.
No, Zeus sucks.
Zeus is probably worse than the Ultimate Solution.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Savage is caught in midair by the Solution, though Hogan's able to rescue him for a bit. Finally, we have Arn and Flair running in. Not really clear on where they've been for a while, but they decided to come in. They double-team Hogan. Savage is tossed in the cage. Swenson slams Hogan. And at this is the point in which Jimmy Hart cackles uproariously.
Yep.
At this point, Tony and all the announcers really do not think that Hogan can survive these, you know, insurmountable odds.
Right.
Solution does sort of an odd lift up his hands taunt, sort of like a video game taunt, and sort of slams down his hands on Hogan's neck repeatedly.
He was storing a finisher.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. I don't know if he ever got it.
No.
His finisher was has huge biceps.
Right.
That was it. He has huge biceps and the other guy falls over dead.
Right. At this point, there is some powder on the ground near Hogan and Savage. I'm begging Bobby Heenan to make a cocaine joke at this point, but he does not do so.
It's sad but true.
It's sad but true. The Booty Man, Brutus Beefcake, former of the Dungeon of Doom. You go ahead.
We should talk about the Booty Man.
We definitely should.
I never thought I would hear myself say that sentence.
Yeah.
Anyway, the Booty Man, we'd already mentioned Ed Leslie, Brutus Beefcake, joined WCW with Hulk Hogan, turned on WCW to join the Three Faces of Fear with Kevin Sullivan, left the Three Faces of Fear and became the Man with No Name, became a good guy for about 10 minutes, disappeared for a while, came back as the Zodiac, the cackling, weird kind of future-telling guy with black-white makeup who goes, yes, no. Then on Nitro, Hulk Hogan reveals that he has planted a spy in the Dungeon of Doom, and it is the Zodiac, and he is not the Zodiac at all. He is the Booty Man in his pants with the pink mesh over his ass.
Right.
And he has earlier tonight retired Diamond Dallas Page. We saw how long that lasted.
Right. He also was sort of inserted at the very end for Johnny B. Badd.
Johnny B. Badd, who left for WWF.
Right.
And so the Booty Man is he's Hogan's friend. That's really the extent of it. He would show up periodically and then try to join the NWO, but then get beaten up.
Right.
Although later
would be the disciple and would be able to go back in, but that was years later. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
And this pay-per-view also features Kimberly basically making the O face during the entire DDP match over the Booty Man's ass. But people seem to like him, I guess, during the match.
Okay. Well,
this was a good crowd, I guess.
Yeah, they really were a good crowd. It's a Southern crowd too, so I'm surprised that they were enamored with Hogan and his antics, but you know, because a lot of the Southern crowds did not care much for him. I guess that was more like Carolina to Georgia, the Flair stronghold. Mississippi was probably less of a Flair, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
We should talk about what the Booty Man brings out, because it brings to the clash between the Alliance and Hulkamania, the Megaforce, and their crack team of foreign objects, where he brings out the cheapest looking frying pans in history.
Yes.
They are horrible. Yep. They bend immediately. The handle breaks off of Savage's.
Right.
And you can tell the minute somebody is hit with them, they're just plastic.
Yeah.
They look awful. It is just the most ridiculous thing, but they beat the crap out of everybody with them.
Right. They slam everyone in the head repeatedly. Everyone gets knocked down. So Lex Luger runs in to help out his buddies. Still right. No Mega Barbarian, or Sullivan, I guess. They're all out the outside.
Sullivan's still poking people, I guess.
Yeah, so Sullivan's poking people, but Mega Barbarian, they took a power early, I guess. So,
they took a powder, huh, after your cocaine joke earlier?
Oh, yes. So I would never say horrible things about Ming.
That would be a poor idea.
That would be a poor idea, yeah. They're
going to both be in Chikara, by the way, for those of you who have never watched.
That would be very exciting.
Ming the Barbarian and the Warlord are all going to be on the team.
I'm less excited about the Warlord, but it makes sense. So, well, you know.
Luger comes in.
He attacks all the good guys from behind. He then gets a black glove out. The weighted glove, yeah. Which, you know, he just has his forearm. He can use his weighted forearm. I don't understand that, but whatever. You know,
he needs a weighted, because those are things, right? You go to the hardware store. I need a weighted glove.
You do, yeah.
Yeah, that's a thing.
The loaded glove.
Mm-hmm.
Flair is holding Savage.
Right.
Luger runs toward Savage. Savage ducks. Luger hesitates, then decides to punch Flair.
Right.
After spending the entire match doing his best to defeat Hogan and Savage.
Right.
And no indication of anything, like, it's not like he's mad that, like, but not like that Flair has done something to him during the match to warrant Luger turning. He never professed being angry about the odds that they had, or there's no reason for this other than they felt like it.
Right. And does it, does anything come of it other than Luke? Because Luger's basically a good guy for realsies from here on out, I believe.
Sort of, but there's still, I think, like, he still kind of acts like a jerk. Like, because I don't think he's really cemented as the good guy until
probably Great American Bash or thereabouts.
Right. Well, yeah.
Where does he fight the giant? Yeah, that's Great American Bash.
Right. Yeah. So it's right before then, basically.
Right. Because even that switch is about 2 or 3 months away.
Yeah. Exactly. So 3 months away, Great American Bash. Yeah. So it's still, you know, like he's more toward the good guy side at this point, you know. But right. But yeah, it's
well, very strict. Luger and Flair specifically have a little bit of history. By this point, I believe they fought at Starrcade, in the very last match, the three way for the title.
That's true.
They had issues before then, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Flair fought Luger and Sting in that triangle match. So it might specifically be that the issue was not so much Lex Luger with the Alliance and Hulkamania as it was Lex Luger with Ric Flair.
Right.
It's just that nothing really came of it.
No. So Savage and Hogan try to escape the cage in as an attempt for victory. Now, yep. Savage is like, oh yeah, we need to pin this guy. So
because of the rules of the match.
Right, he's almost halfway out of the cage. And he's like, run back and then go cover Flair. Now, there are several other heels like surrounding this area, any of them who could maybe go and help break up the pin, but they do not choose to do so.
they're busy holding their heads because they've been cheap frying pan to death.
I guess, yes. Yeah. And then there's the count.
And that's the one thing that makes me believe, by the way, that they changed the match a little bit on the fly. That's one of the things. It suggests to me that the original rule of the match was that you had to escape, but they'd already escaped. They'd already been out once.
Perhaps.
That is the only explanation I can think of, because it feels so weird that they go to escape, he goes for the pin, goes back in, and then they leave and win the match.
Yeah, I mean, I guess either Savage forgot or your explanation makes sense too. I mean, I don't know which one I buy, but either one I think is possible.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's the end.
That is it. It is over.
And the mooks kind of mill about in a circle for a little while.
Yeah.
And Hulkamania will live forever, according to Tony Schiavone.
Right.
Or at least for another 3 or 4 months.
Sure. Although Hogan basically not on TV after this until Bash at the Beach 96. I think there's some video packages and, you know, and maybe some, you know, featurettes of filming Thunder in Paradise or whatever the hell it was at this point. But yeah, he's not involved in any stories. He doesn't do anything significant. This is basically it.
Yeah. And it really, when you look back on it, it throws the whole Bash at the Beach thing into kind of relief, where you look back and you kind of go, oh yeah, because Hogan, I think at this point, if it wasn't, we had a few more months. I won't say that Hall and Nash coming over was a sure thing, because we still had a few more months after this, and things seemed to happen really quickly at that point. But Hogan was a guy who, even when the Bash at the Beach happened, he was around in the sense that he was kind of there in spirit, but he wasn't physically there.
Right.
Which I think made the reveal at Bash at the Beach that much better, because he had been off TV for a while.
Mm.
He had been a guy that everybody kind of remembered, oh, he's a WCW guy, but nobody really had it in their head that he would do that. So
exactly.
So yes, ladies and gentlemen, the success of Bash at the Beach 96, the success of the reveal of the New World Order can be a part attributed to this weird cluster mess.
Yes. And it is without question, it is a huge cluster mess. But like I said, yeah, it's not boring. It's not, you know, I mean, there are things that are terrible about it overall. I mean, I think it works better out of context. Like, if you're not worried about Ric Flair getting buried, or if you're not worried about, like, the Dungeon of Doom being this thing that's dominated WCW for, you know, a year, year and a half, that's featured a lot of bad wrestlers doing a lot of bad and silly things, then it's not so annoying. It's just like, oh, it's just this fun, goofy match with these characters and whatever. It's not, you know, it's not nothing that I'm invested in, so it's just a silly thing.
And Flair made it, you know. Flair came out of it just fine. There's so much talk about, oh, Hulk Hogan buries eight guys, but let's get real. Flair made out of it just fine. Arn Anderson did not have much time left, but made it out just fine. Ming and the Barbarian had nothing to gain out of it, I hate to say it. Sullivan was the big bad and needed to be vanquished forever. Luger came out of it just fine, and Z-Gangsta and Ultimate Solution went off to join Ming and the Barbarian with the powder on some unknown part of the planet. So, as far as, you know, there's so much complaining about the time, like, oh, they Hulk Hogan buried everybody, but it turned out okay.
Yeah.
They survived. There's so much lack of context with this match. People just say, well, Hogan wanted to beat a whole bunch of guys, but nobody looks at, like, everything else that happened. And I'm not saying Flair was treated great in WCW, but this wasn't what did him in.
Right. Now, I will say that Hogan, especially in WCW, you know, in his couple years in WCW, like, they could have done a lot better job making his opponents look like they were at his level, looking like they were foes worthy of being vanquished rather than just being like inevitable guys that he would defeat. And Flair was certainly on that list.
I think back to anytime people say that, I always think back to Halloween Havoc 94.
Right.
Which is one of the most ridiculous matches ever.
Yeah.
And it's significantly worse than this one, by the way, if you've never seen it.
It's been a long time since I've seen it.
It's bad.
Yeah. The worst thing I think for me on that was Flair, basically Hogan retiring Flair, and then immediately Flair, you know, of course, the greatest legend in WCW's history, retiring him, just not getting any sort of moment of like that, you know, being significant weighty thing, and then going right into the whole, you know, Butcher unmasked and revealed to be the guy who's turning heel on Hogan. So
yeah, that was Halloween Havoc.
Right. Yeah. So I would say that was, and I think that was a problem with Hulkamania for like the last 5 or 6 years is you think of the first half of, you know, Hogan's big run versus the second half of it, those, you know, 12 years or so. The opponents in the last 6 years were largely not as good or not as well taken care of,
right,
to an extent, you know?
Right.
I mean, you just didn't have the guys who felt like they were on Hogan's level, or at least they weren't treated that way.
Right.
You know, other than I think Vader for a while was presented pretty well. And, you know, there were probably certainly a couple of other exceptions, but for the most part, that was kind of the difference.
The Vader thing was just so weird because he really had the upper hand for a lot of the feud. He looked good in their matches.
Mm-hmm.
And then it sort of devolved into the whole story was Flair kept costing Vader matches. And so Vader did a weird good guy turn.
Yeah.
and so it wasn't so much that Vader was booked badly as it was the story just took a weird direction.
Right.
Instead of getting the definitive match where Hogan sort of vanquishes the bad guy definitively, it's just like Vader just gets mad at Flair and Hogan starts fighting the Giant instead.
Right, exactly. So yeah, and I guess Giant was built up pretty well. And that was the title switch of Giant winning by disqualification when Jimmy Hart turns on Hogan, another kind of a key story in the Dungeon of Doom, that was obviously, that didn't make Giant look great. But beyond that, you know, he was built up pretty well and treated reasonably well during this time as far as how he was booked.
Right. So, yeah, basically what I'm saying is you know, Hogan gets a lot of crap, and some of it's deserved, but everything kind of worked out.
Everything tends to kind of work out the way that it's going to work out.
Yep. And Flair's still around, sort of. Well, actually, that's not probably the happy part. And but Flair, you know, he survived with his legacy intact. He survived dressing in drag to attack Hulk Hogan. He
right
survived, you know,
yeah.
getting punched out by Jimmy Garvin in drag. Flair can get beaten up in a match where he's among seven other guys.
Right. Yeah, and it's the whole thing is the Mega Force. They make it out by the skin of their teeth,
right?
Rather, than,
and they get lucky. Luger helps them.
Right. Yeah. So it's not. Yeah. I'm not saying it's good. Yeah. I'm not saying it was smart. I'm not saying that everyone in it looked great. But it, you know, wasn't like a burial either. You know. Uh-huh.
What about the rest? Did you watch the rest of the show?
I did not watch the rest of the show. I've
It's not very good. So
no, I feel like I've seen the Booty Man DDP match before. I've seen Colonel Rara Parker and Medusa. I guess I've seen most of this show, but I've definitely.
I feel really bad that during the Colonel Robert Parker Medusa match, they allude to Medusa ruining Colonel Parker's wedding.
Yeah,
and I went, why have I never seen that?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
That sounds right up my alley.
Yeah.
There is nothing about the sentence Medusa ruins Colonel Robert Parker's wedding that I do not love.
Yeah. It's a Sherry, I believe.
Was it to Sherry? Were they together by this point?
I believe so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Huh. But it's not a great show. The Road Warrior Street Fight is kind of fun, but a little long.
It's Conan and minutes, yeah.
Yeah, Conan and Eddie Guerrero have a fun little stupid opener,
yeah,
with a really stupid ending,
yeah,
and then nothing else happens.
Regal and Finlay have a hell of a match.
They do, and just like everything else, they have a nice match that ends really stupidly.
Yeah,
because it goes for 17 minutes, and then there's a disqualification.
At Uncensored.
Yeah, and I think Regal and Finlay have had better matches than that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I agree, but it's still really good. If I'm remembering the right match, they had some really great ones in Saturday Night around that time too. So
yeah.
maybe those were the better. Maybe this one wasn't quite as good, but
I think this was an off night for both guys. I'm kind of a Regal Finlay connoisseur. This isn't the best.
I'll defer to you on that.
Yeah, you're right. You will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the Giant beat Loch Ness, so...
Woo!
Loch Ness,
by the way, was Giant Haystacks. A lot of American people haven't seen him. He was this giant, hairy guy. He weighed about a zillion pounds, and he could barely move, and the match was stupid.
He was in the Dungeon of Doom, too, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was in the Dungeon of Doom. He left and
like
kind of...
before.
Yeah, not long before. I don't recall he was with WCW for very long.
No, because he's involved in – somehow he's in – if I recall correctly, the month before is – it's a Super Brawl cage match where Giant beat – or where Hogan beats a Giant and then like beats up everybody like when they're attacking him in the cage, like, you know, like mm-hmm. the ninja one-on-one type thing. And right. then Loch Ness, like he comes – he wants in on the cage, and then everybody pulls him back. Like he wants Hogan, like they're like teasing that he's going to be like, you know, kind of the next guy to go after Hogan.
Right. I don't remember that. I don't think I've seen that Super Brawl. What happened?
It's a
no. I've never seen that show. I'll be
double
dang.
Cage match. Yeah.
Oh, that's the one with I've seen the strap match with. Sullivan and Pillman. That's all I've seen on that
right.
show.
Yeah, the Savage, that's the one where Elizabeth turns. That's the Savage.
Yes. It
is. Yeah, Savage.
Why do I feel like I've seen about half this show.
Okay.
It's like, there was a while where I had seen all of Raising Arizona, but I had seen it out of order, and I didn't actually see it until about 5 years later, and I think Super Brawl 96 is like that. I'm looking at this like, no, I've seen that, but I don't think I've ever sat down and watched the whole show.
I'm the same way with Uncensored, it looks like, because I've seen most of the matches, but yeah, I have not seen them all together anyway, so.
Yeah, Doomsday cage match. Give it a skip, probably.
Yeah.
You can do without seeing it, but it won't kill you.
It's fascinating enough that I feel like maybe you should watch it just for the reputation of it, nonetheless, and just to kind of
give it a chance, maybe.
Yeah, you know, you can fast forward to some of the dull parts if you want. We're not going to judge you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, Bill. Well, you want to? Of course, you're on Twitter, and yep. So tell everyone about you.
Okay, I am. I'm on Twitter. You can follow me at the hot tag THEHOTTAG. I sometimes tweet shows. Some people think I'm funny, I guess. I am also going to be working on a book with my writers group. It's a short story collection. And I have a story that's going to appear in it that is about wrestling.
Ooh.
And the story's called Kayfabe. And sort of a weird mystical element kind of story, but the main character is basically Bobo Brazil.
Hmm.
So you might be interested in that. I will put more information about it on the Twitter, of course, because I like selling things and getting money. So I don't really have anything else to plug. Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Oh, yeah. Thanks very much, of course, for being on the show. And everyone can check us out at WrestleSpective.com, where we post the podcast and sometimes videos and photos and other things related to the podcast. And, of course, check out our sponsor again, RotoReels.com, excellent source of DVDs and downloads of all kinds of professional wrestling. So, thanks, everyone, for checking us out, and we'll be back again soon.
Take care.